The How Not to Suck at Divorce podcast cannot be copied or rebroadcast without consent. This podcast does not contain legal advice. The information provided on the podcast and the resources available are not intended as and shall not be construed or understood to be legal advice.
You might have heard of the co-parenting app, Our Family Wizard, but are you aware of what makes this popular app a go-to solution for over 1 million parents and family law practitioners, including myself?
It's the way that Our Family Wizard helps co-parents organize their calendars, expenses, and messages. No more back and forth texting with your ex over who's paying for your kid to give Kaylee, Kyle, Kaden, or whoever a birthday party gift.
That's right, because Our Family Wizard can organize monthly expenses, everything from medical bills to birthday party gifts, and help you send effective and productive messages without the snark. In fact, Our Family Wizard even has a tone meter, a built-in snark detector that will help you tone down your messages.
And although snark can be really fun, it's really expensive and damaging to your mental health and your kids. So save the snark for happy hour with your friends and save the money for the birthday party presents and check out Our Family Wizard.
Our Family Wizard, making co-parenting easier.
The topic that always brings me to my knees when talking about my divorce has been my children. And I think that that's something that we find everywhere. Everyone's concern is, will my kids be okay? And so on today's episode of How Not to Suck at Divorce, we're doing another really important re-air episode from a conversation that we had a few years ago with Dr. Randy Heller. And we called this episode, Will My Kids Be Okay? Because of the fact, well, honestly, probably at the time when we recorded this, it was my biggest fear. Not to mention, we receive so many questions, whether it's in our private group or DMs or emails from listeners who are saying, my kids are struggling and I don't know what to do. And I'm worried that this divorce is going to ruin the rest of their lives. So we decided that it was time that we re-aired this conversation to help give everybody hope and some steps that they can take to ensure that their kids will be okay. And I'm coming to you guys from, I think we're about 2 years later, I think it is. And you guys, my kids are okay. There are still days when they struggle. There are still times when they're angry, but they're okay. And I look back on where we were 2 years ago in this, and I look back on where we were before I decided to leave my marriage. And I think about what my kids' lives would look like if they were still living in such an unhappy and dysfunctional home. And I know that I made the right decision. So take a listen to this episode. I know you're going to learn something, and I hope that you'll feel a little less alone.
TGIF, y'all. It's Friday over here at the How Not to Suck at Divorce Club. When I just said TGIF, did you have flashbacks to like back in the day when we watched TGIF on ABC? You ever watch that, Morgan? Like with Full House and
yes,
Family Matters.
Totally was watching that a long time ago.
Totally.
I was thinking more like TGIF Fridays, but
oh, old school. Both of them bring back the 90s, y'all. So we're here. We are ready to party, guys. Today's episode is so good.
This conversation doesn't have to be a daunting one.
The kids almost thrive better because that tension is gone.
And this is How Not to Suck at Divorce. We're going to get to it as fast as possible. I'm drinking wine because it's wine o'clock somewhere. That sounds like a sign that they would have hanging at TGI Fridays.
That's right. I am drinking an old fashioned because I'm old fashioned apparently. And, you know, I think that you either like old fashions or you like Manhattans. And my grandmother Bernice used to drink Manhattans. And that just seems like a little too old school for me. So I'm an old fashioned kind of a girl tonight.
I love that your grandmother's name is Bernice.
Bernice. And she was married to Leonard.
Oh, so, okay. Before we get into one of my favorite games, I have to tell you that my grandmother, Mrs. Rhoda Rappaport, is now listening to our podcast. And she said to me this morning,
well, Andrea, darling, I better start thinking of more witty things to say if you're going to be talking about me.
Hi, Rhoda.
She heard the episode. We're talking about her and her gin martinis. Okay. Morgan, are you ready to play the world's most favorite game?
The rom-com and the horror movie.
Yes, that game. Okay, yes, I'm ready to play.
That's the one. Okay, guys, it is time for the rom-com and horror film moment of the week, where we share the best part of the week and not so best part.
Right. And so this week we are talking about the best and worst Netflix shows that we've seen, because everyone can relate to that. So I'm just going to jump in. The best one, the rom-com that I saw, was The Tinder Swindler.
That's mine!
Stop, really?
That's mine!
That guy is Rico Suave. Talk about everyone likes narcissists. Like, this guy is beyond. Okay. You can't even stop watching it. It's so unbelievable.
I loved it. I absolutely loved it. And then I just saw that he's finally been banned from Tinder.
There should be so many more things against him that I don't even know. Where is every government that he created crimes in their country? Why are they not coming after him?
And just, I just, so well done. So guys, stop what you're doing. I mean, first of all, finish listening to this episode and then run to Netflix and watch The Tinder Swindler. Okay, what did you watch?
And don't go out with Simon Levive.
No, he is not. He's not a diamond dealer, y'all.
That's right. All right, worst horror. I was watching it just trying to zone out, and I somehow got an I Am Georgina. It is awful. Awful. Okay. Don't watch it.
Okay, we're kind of living the same life, because I'll tell you why. So when I got on Netflix today, because I was trying to take like a moment to breathe, the second recommendation was I Am Georgina, but I was stopped because the first recommendation was it was season two of a show that I somehow got through season one. But season two, the first episode was so drippingly saccharine sweet, Southern, like, bleh, I couldn't handle it. And I'm talking about Sweet Magnolias.
Haven't seen it.
Don't. Okay. It was bag-worthy, boring, whatever. Sorry if you love it, I didn't.
That's how I felt about Georgina. Entitled, completely missing the boat. Okay, yeah. Moving on, because the meat of this episode is so important. Everybody, I cannot tell you how excited I am to introduce today's guest. Her name is Dr. Randi Heller, and in my opinion, she's a complete unicorn. She has her PhD in family therapy. She's a licensed mental health counselor, a marriage and family therapist, a reunification therapist, collaborative divorce specialist, and she's a mediator. She's basically all the things. And talk about somebody who knows what they're talking about in the divorce space with the science behind it. And we are thrilled that she's with us today. Well, over Zoom today, but nonetheless, we are so thrilled.
So excited. So I spoke to Dr. Heller yesterday and my jaw dropped so many times during our call. So there is probably no better guest that I can think of to help everybody not suck at divorce. Thank you so much for being here with us today, Dr. Heller. Welcome to our show.
Oh, Andrea and Morgan, thank you. Thanks so much for having me, because I look at this as an opportunity. I spend my days trying to help people to move forward in the midst of their life's challenges. And if I can spread some good word on a Friday afternoon and help people to say, okay, how can I move forward in my life right now, today? That's my intention. And so to have this opportunity with you, I'm thrilled, absolutely thrilled.
We are too. And I was really struck by so many points that you made on our call yesterday, but I want to focus on the three conversations that you recommend someone having before the divorce process is underway?
Okay, so, you know, when we spoke, we tried to contain it, right? Mm-hmm. Because divorce seems so big and it seems so overwhelming. And so I love this idea of three conversations. And what came to mind immediately is that first we want to have a conversation with ourselves. We know we're having those conversations, right? We know those conversations are going on. As a matter of fact, clinically, we call that the contemplation stage, or even the pre-contemplation stage. When we know something has to change, we just don't know how to do it. We don't know what to do. We don't know when, where to go, any of that. So we are having those conversations in our head and with ourselves. And I think, you know, contemplating divorce, there's so much uncertainty. There's often shame, there's guilt, there's doubt, there's anger, there's hurt. There's so much. And that, to my mind, are, you know, the precursors to, I know I need to make a change. I don't know how to do it. I don't know where to turn. So of course, the next conversation that I think is critical is that we seek assistance. We seek guidance. And in the divorce arena, there's, you know, to my mind, divorce is a relational, it's a legal, and it's a financial matter. Right. So there's any one of those three entities that we want to turn toward initially. And the hopes are through those entities, we're going to find another support in another entity of a professional who can really help us. So it might be the first thing I do is talk to a lawyer and find out, you know, what are my rights and where do I stand and how do I first approach this? Or it might be a therapist. So often, it's a therapist where, you know, you've been to marriage counseling isn't working, or you've been to an individual therapist because, you know, you're wondering what to do. You know, you're not happy, but you don't know where to turn. Or you've been to, you know, a neighbor, or I say often our nail techs, right? And our bartenders and our hairdressers, they're the person.
They know everything.
Right? They know everything. They're the person we turn to. And so, you know, we want to turn to a professional though, who is going to help us to get the direction we need. And to my mind, any competent professional is going to direct you to even the next best professional to talk with.
And by professional, you don't mean the bartender.
I don't. It's, yeah, right. I'm expressing that.
Just taking notes.
maybe it's a bartender after the professional, but it's not the bartender first. No, it's the professional who can say, okay, here's where I hear that you are. And here's what I think, you know, could best support you in moving forward. So if a client is with me as a clinician and they're contemplating divorce, of course, I'm going to send them to a good and competent. So those are two different things, right? So a good and competent divorce attorney. If they're uncertain about, you know, their finances and they're scared and they don't know if they can manage to be divorced, which is so often the case, people stay in bad marriages because they think that there's no other way out. I might send them to a financial professional, but more often than not, it's a clinician and or a lawyer, and that could be a simultaneous process.
So just to recap, I mean, you've told us about the three conversations. We've gone through one and number two. And just to make sure we're on the same page, the first one is having the conversation with yourself, right? And the second one is having a conversation with a professional that will lead to alternate conversations. And I love that recommendation legally, because I always tell everybody knowledge is power. Yeah. And I also think that having an action plan is the key to success. The roadmap calms anxiety of the unknown, which is kind of what you're giving people, this roadmap. Do you see this calming everybody's anxiety when they're really kind of worried about what the next steps are?
I do. I agree with you, Morgan. I think, you know, being armed with information is the best thing we can do. And I don't mean armed because you're getting, you know, prepared for war, because that's not where I come from at all. You know, I see myself as a peacemaker, even in the midst of the greatest conflicts, because one, with that first conversation, it's about creating inner peace, right? And when you have that sense of inner peace, you're more grounded, less reactive, and you know where you're headed next. And then even when you meet with the next professional, particularly a lawyer, you can present information in such a different way if you're in a more calm and peaceful place. And then, you know, leading into the subsequent conversation that you need to have that we're going to talk about.
So Dr. Heller, what is the third? I'm sitting on pins and needles because I'm so interested. Yeah. What's the third conversation that you recommend people having when they're thinking about divorce?
Yeah, so challenging as it may seem and frightening as it may be, the next conversation is a conversation with your spouse. And the reason that I say that is because, to my mind, it's so important not to have surprises. So I think the worst thing that can happen is that somebody's served with divorce papers and they didn't know it. They didn't know it was coming. I mean, you might wonder, well, how can they not know it's coming? We've been sleeping in separate bedrooms for, you know, months or years. However, I think that sets the tone for, you know, attack, defend. And I don't think it's ever good, particularly if you have children. You must come together around those children, even in the worst of situations. So if you are afraid to have those conversations, or you're hesitant, or you don't know what to say, so that's where that therapist comes in. Because when I am working as a clinician with people and they're contemplating going home and talking to their spouse, we'll role play it. We'll talk about what's the best approach. What has happened in the past when you've had difficult and challenging conversations, and how can I help you to have a different kind of conversation than you've had in the past?
I think that's important because I know that for listeners out there who are in a situation right now where things are already pretty contentious, the idea of sitting their spouse down and coming up with a game plan seems really daunting, right? Sure. And it seems like something that they're like, I'm not going to do that. So knowing that there's someone who can help.
Dr. Heller, I want to know legally whether medically you agree with my scenario, which is what I tell people, which is whenever you do have this conversation, ideally, I would like you to be in public at a Starbucks, having a dinner over a glass of wine, somewhere where people are less likely to get heated and more likely to kind of behave. Do you feel that that's appropriate as well?
I think that's a great suggestion, Morgan. And again, you know, in a clinical setting, we can be strategic about that. You know, what has worked in the past and what hasn't worked in the past. Of course, if there's children, we don't want this conversation happening when there's children in the house. So I like your idea of a Starbucks or a public place. We joked about, you know, we joked about having a cocktail before earlier, but I think leaving that out of this conversation is probably best, because I don't think that people are their best selves at times of stress when they're drinking. And so, you know, that's a time where you need to have your wits about you. And so I like your idea of a coffee or a lunch or somewhere in public. I don't think there should be third parties present. You know, sometimes people think, oh, let me have my mom there. Let me have, you know, a friend there, or not a good idea. This is a conversation between you and your spouse about where things are and where things need to be. And particularly if you have children, how are we going to talk to the kids about this?
What about a neutral third party? What about having this conversation take place in a therapist's office for situations where, I mean, and I'm speaking like from my own, and I didn't do this, but I would have fallen into the category of having a conversation between the two of us would not have been fruitful. So is that something?
Andrea, great suggestion. I it's a wonderful suggestion. I, as a marriage counselor, when I'm working with couples who aren't going to make it, we often do that. And then we prepare to tell the children, and we will do role-playing in the office about how are we going to talk to them. I will even develop a script with them, not for them. And I say that because every family's different. And, you know, I want it to come from them and be a natural conversation. But yes, so that they have information, like we talked about before, being armed with information to have these conversations. Great suggestion.
Dr. Heller, I love it. So we've got three conversations to have before you move into divorce. It is the conversation with yourself, a conversation with a professional or a therapist. And the third one is the conversation with your spouse. And then now you just touched on something that I think everyone worries about who has children going into the divorce, which is the conversation you have with your children. Yeah. And I want to kind of jump into that topic because I think everyone wants to hear about that and get the thoughts. I know personally, when I am in mediation, that's a big topic for us. Sure. I don't send my one client out to talk to the kids. I don't think that's fair. The kids don't deserve that. Ideally, both parents would have some kind of uniformity of what they're saying and why they're saying. And I love that you also agree that it should be worked out between both parents because both parents have thoughts on what they want to say or not say, right?
Absolutely. So, you know, that is really the focus of the work I do as a peacemaker. You know, if there aren't children involved, you know, hopefully you can resolve your, you know, issues around your marriage and your estate, et cetera, and just move forward and say bye and go on. If you have children, you're going to be together for as long as you both shall live around those children. And it is critical that parents set the context for we're going to be together for you. Hopefully someday we're going to be at your school events. We're going to be at your games. We're going to be at your extracurricular activities. We're going to be at your wedding and your, you know, when you have a baby. And so that very first conversation, two people together saying, you're the best thing that came out of our union. And we want to create safety for you. And, you know, the other part of it is, and we've talked about this, this conversation doesn't have to be a daunting one. You know, the statistics on divorce being damaging for children has changed. My research and research that came before me speaks to the notion that children really, really can do better in a home where two people are divorced and they're at peace than in a home where there's conflict and dissatisfaction and unhappiness and a lack of love and affection and good vibe. Let's just say that. And so we know that divorce does not have to be devastating. And I think if parents come from a place where divorce doesn't have to be devastating, then children don't pick up the notion that this is going to devastate me. You know, we can use COVID as an example. If we're afraid of COVID, kids are afraid of COVID. If we're afraid of, I come from Florida. If we're afraid of hurricanes, kids are afraid of hurricanes. If we're afraid to explore going across the street, kids are frightened of that. We have to help them to know how they're going to be okay. And that is the core of this conversation. How you are going to be okay. Mommy and daddy are going to work out a way for you kids to be okay, even if we're not going to be together. And we're going to be together as a family.
It's interesting you hit on that because this is what I tell my clients who are worried about separating because of the kids. I always say to them, you have no idea what the kids are feeling in the house. They feel so much more than you know. If there's tension, they feel it. And what I always see, I would say the majority of my clients that actually end up separating, the kids almost thrive better because that tension is gone.
100%, 100%. I can tell you about so many kids that I've worked with where the parents say, oh, they don't know what's going on. You know, that's one of the first questions I ask is, if your kids were in the room right now, what would they tell me about your relationship? Oh, they don't really know what's going on. And then I get them in the room and they know everything. They know, you know, mom and dad are arguing when we go to sleep at night. Mom and dad don't get along. Mom and dad don't like each other. Mommy hates daddy. Daddy hates mommy, et cetera, et cetera. And so you're right, Morgan. It's so important that tension is lifted. They feel a sense of freedom only if you let them know they're going to be okay. If you let them know that they don't have to make decisions about who they're going to love, who they want to live with, where they want to live, how they want to live, that you're going to make those decisions. You're going to listen to their voice. That's the other part. We know from the research that kids need to have a voice. That doesn't necessarily mean they have a choice, but it means that we're listening to their voice and we acknowledge what's important to them. And we try to incorporate that into our decision-making, right? So if we let them know it's going to be okay, they're going to trust that it's going to be okay.
That was so interesting. The difference between having a voice versus a choice. And I think that I think that, I mean, I'm thinking even in my own situation, something that I could apply, you know, saying to my own children, you know, although you might not have a choice, you do have a voice. And I think that it's important to let them know that. Okay, a few other things I want to say. Number one, just so that Morgan is aware, when Dr. Heller was going over that last piece about children being not only okay, but possibly healthier in the long run, I totally broke down and cried on the phone. So everyone know that. Number two, people who are listening right now, myself included, who did not handle speaking to the children in the way that we just laid out. And they're thinking, well, shit, I'm already up a creek. Because man, I fucked that part up, right? And I know this is something, spoiler alert, this is going to be a two-part episode. And we're getting into all of the co-parenting nuts and bolts when we speak next. But is there hope?
Yeah, I'm so glad you're asking me that, Andrea, because, you know, what I talk to parents about, oftentimes I'm seeing them after things have broken down and they have to go back and they have to undo and redo. And what a wonderful example that is for kids. Mm-hmm. We can make mistakes, we can screw up, and then we can learn and we can correct and we can grow. So what I often ask parents to do is go sit down with your kids and tell them you messed up. Go sit down with your kids and tell them, you know, I didn't handle this well. We didn't handle this well. We're going to own this. We're going to get help and we're going to make it better for you because we're your parents and we want it to be good for you. So we're going to teach you how to own mistakes, how to take responsibility for mistakes, and how to do things better. And that's what we're doing now. We went to, and telling them, we went to see a lady who, that's how they talk about me. We went to see a talking doctor, and she's teaching us how to do this because we've never done this before. So we went to see somebody who is teaching us how to be better parents, and we've messed up and we want to be better parents and we're going to learn how to do this better. And when I said before, I just want to circle back to something I said before about when you tell your kids you're going to be a family, I think that's important. We're going to be a family. We're going to be a different kind of family, but we're going to be a family. And we're going to learn how to be a family in two homes. We're going to learn how to be a family, even if we're not married. We're going to learn how to be a family because we got to keep focusing on this. You're the best thing we did. You're the best thing that happened because we were married and we were together. And we want to continue in that way. And that's key, really key. And let me stress also, Andrea, what I know was so, I think, pivotal for you to hear. So the research on divorce used to be that kids were going to be damaged. I said that earlier. Mm-hmm. What we now know is that children of divorce, this kind of sounds crazy, but children of divorce really can do better in life than children from intact families. And you might say, well, you know, we don't go out, we don't tell people, you know, go out and get divorced so that children can do well in life. We don't do that. However, this is a really, really important piece of information because think about it. Kids have to learn how to move from one home to another. They have to learn how to remember their backpack and their schoolwork and, you know, their clothing and to adjust to moving back and forth. They also have to learn how to take directives from two people who are probably very different, which kind of, you know, leads up to why people get divorced, right? So it's kind of the same way that in middle school, we have children moving from one teacher to another teacher to another teacher so they can learn to adapt, right? So in this way, kids become very adaptable. And the more any person becomes more adaptable and flexible, the more resilient they become in life. So think about that, listeners.
And guys, we know that there's some feedback on the on Dr. Heller's, you know, conversation, but it's so good that I don't want to redo this. I want it to be authentic. So if you hear a little feedback, we're apologizing, but this is the real information and I don't want to redo it. Andrea, are you okay?
Yeah, why?
You know, I mean, you're real. You're sitting here and our listeners can't see you. And Dr. Heller's telling us all of the, you know, intimate details about how kids are taking this in. And Andrea's on the Zoom, you know, bawling. And so sure. I just, you know, I want our listeners to know that you're feeling this too. And, you know.
And it, can we talk about this so many times, Morgan, right? The only thing that will bring people to their knees are their kids. Yeah. And no two divorces are alike. No one's stories are alike. But the one thing that everyone will agree on is everybody wants to know that their kids are going to be okay, right? That's what everybody asks you all the time. That's why so many people reach out to the both of us and say, I don't think I can even embark on this divorce journey because I don't think my kids will be okay. And I love that we are sitting with someone who's telling us they will. And you are in control of more than you think you are. There are things that we can all do, no matter how many mistakes we made before. It's never too late.
You know, one question I have, Dr. Heller, because you just told us basically kids will be okay. And the research is from the old school is totally turned on its head, which I love to hear. But one of my questions is, could you share with us a few, I know everybody's different, but share with us a few options or ideas for how to get this conversation started with children, you know, a few quick ones.
Yeah. So let me go back to kids will be okay only there's a caveat, only if parents are okay together in divorce. So kids will not be okay if you're in the midst of a high conflict divorce and these children are being torn between you and they have loyalty issues and they're not sure who to love and mom's depressed or dad's depressed and, you know, parents aren't functioning. Kids won't be okay in that regard. So it's really, really important that you be okay. So then your kids will be okay. So that's a really important caveat that I want to add.
Which is what we'll get into more in our next episode is how do we help ourselves so that we are okay.
Okay. So in terms of your question, Morgan, it's a great one. So first and foremost, having this conversation together, as we said before, because when you have it together, you are setting the context for we as your parents are going to be together as your parents for as long as we both live. So even though we may not be together in marriage anymore, we're going to be together for you. So that's the first thing. The second thing is I like to suggest, different than the conversation we talked about having it with your spouse, I like to suggest that it happens at home, not in a therapist's office, and I'll explain why, but at home, if at all possible. And the reason for that is that's where the kids are safe. They can, if it's too much for them, go to their rooms. They can, if it's too much for them, play with the family pet. They can, if it's too much for them, grab a stuffed animal or a blanket or something that feels secure to them, grab a snack, whatever. They're in their home environment. So together and in their family home. And let me just speak briefly, not in a therapist's office, because they may need that therapist later to deal with their own stuff. And if they have that conversation in a therapist's office, it kind of taints the safety of that environment, right? This is the place where mom and dad told me they're getting a divorce, and this just doesn't feel good anymore. So I encourage it to be in their homes where they feel safe and that the two of you are together. I also suggest that they're going to ask all kinds of questions. Where are we going to live? Are we going to sell the house? When am I going to see mommy? When am I going to see daddy? And today's day, let me correct, it may be mommy, mommy, or daddy, daddy, right? So when are we going to see our parents? You need to let them know that you will tell them things as you know things, that this is not going to happen fast. It's going to happen in a very kind of planned way. And what you do know at the moment would be useful. So if you have decided in conversation with your spouse that one of you is going to leave, then you talk about that and you talk about where and when and how. I do recommend that nobody moves out in front of the children. Nobody moves out of a house in front of the children, because that is a memory that they'll never forget. But when you know things, you tell them things. I also encourage that they be a part of that planning. So if you are going to move to another place, that it's okay, this is mommy's house and this is daddy's house, or mommy's house and mommy's house, etc. And where do you want your room to be? How do you want your room to be? Take them, you know, you're going to take them shopping to decorate their rooms, and you're going to make it a positive experience, not a daunting experience. Tell you a quick story about a family that came in. Parents came in with me. We did the strategic planning. They went home to talk to their children, and they created these beautiful storybooks with their children about mom's house and dad's house. And they drew where mom was going to live, and they had maps, neighborhood maps, and they had the rooms, and they had mom's house and dad's house. So they had the kids in mom's house and the kids in dad's house. And they were these storybooks that each child had. So it wasn't so scary, and it wasn't so daunting. It was really like a very positive thing. And they made it a very positive, mom's going to be happy here and dad's going to be happy here, and you're going to be happy in both places.
I love that. I think that's so amazing for people that really can do that. And for the people that can't do that, that will be our next episode to talk about ideas on how to get through that. My question for you, and the question I get a lot, is, do you have different conversations with different age children? I mean, in my mind, a four-year-old is very different than a 12-year-old. So what do you suggest in that situation?
Wonderful question. So absolutely. So you want to have, you know, kind of the umbrella conversation, I call it, all together. And then I think there's spin-off conversations, because you're right, Morgan, a four-year-old is going to have a very different, one, interest, and three, and two, ability to take in information than a 7-year-old, than an 11-year-old, than a 15-year-old, or more. So I think those spin-off conversations should happen in a separate space. And that might be, we're going to go out for a coffee at Starbucks, or we're, depending on ages, or we're going to go to the park and take a walk. And I think that conversation has to be curiosity based, right? So it's about, hey, you know, I know we shared this information with you, and what are you thinking? What are you worried about? What are you most afraid of? What thoughts do you have? What's important to you? So instead of talking at them and telling them things, be curious about what's then going on in their minds. The other things we have to be careful about is flooding kids with information. You know, I go back to, I remember kind of a funny story and a little off topic, but I remember when I had the sex conversation with my daughter, who's now 32, mm-hmm. mother of her own. And I, you know, was a beginning therapist at the time. And I thought, okay, I'm going to give her all the details, right? And I remember going through, she was, I don't know how old, but I'm going through like all this information. And she looked at me and she said, now her father had a van, we had a van. And she said, well, did you do it in the van?
Oh my gosh.
That was what, I think she was five, I don't know, seven.
Oh my gosh.
But that's what she wanted to know. There was something curious to her about, I said, you know, mommy and daddy got together and this is what happened. And I'm giving her the details. She's like, but did you do it in the van? So my point is, kids don't want more information than they can take in. And we have to pay attention to that. We want to give them everything. And sometimes they don't need everything. They want to know, here's what they want to know, of all ages. They want to know they're safe. They want to know they can love both of you. They want to know how they're going to be able to see both of you. And here's more important. Kids want to know, how is this going to affect my life? Kids are very what we call egocentric. The world revolves around them, right? Which is age appropriate until they're, I don't know, 30. However, they want to know, how is this going to change my life? Who's going to be at my birthday party? What are we doing for Christmas? What are we doing for the holidays? What does this mean, you know, when we have a school play? Where are you going to be? So it's really important that you touch on those things. How is this going to change my life? And what we know also is the safety comes from their experience that this really isn't going to change things a whole lot. That we are going to try to keep your life as intact as possible, so that you don't have the upheavals that you might be afraid of. Does that make sense?
It does. And I think that this really lays the groundwork so nicely for everyone who's listening, because I think that we're showing you, like, look, okay, Here are the three conversations that you need to have prior to getting things going. Here's a template for how you speak to your children, what you say, how you say it, all that stuff. And knowing that even if things go a little off kilter, there's a way to get back on track. And I know that that's what we're going to talk about the next time we are together. So before we leave everybody today, I want to make sure, Dr. Heller, that they know where can they go online if they want to know anything and everything about you, if they want to get in touch with you for maybe how you can help them directly.
Thanks so much. So one thing I didn't say that I have to say, the first thing you must tell your children, and this is not their fault. So in that egocentrism, kids think they're responsible in some way. If you had a fight about their homework, they think it's their fault you're getting divorced. If you had an argument about who's taking them to an extracurricular, they think it's their fault. So start every conversation with, this is not your fault. This is about us. So that aside, okay. So yeah, I have a website, www.familynetworkflorida.com, newyork.com, or connecticut.com. So you can reach me that way. My New York telephone number is 646-717-6718, or my Florida and New York and Connecticut, you can reach me 954-236-4490. There's also some great resources online for working with families going through divorce. I've written several articles. You can find those on my websites. And anyone that needs assistance, I'm happy to at minimum direct you to where you need to go.
And friends, we're going to put all this information in the show notes, and it'll be all over our social media channels. So don't feel like you've got to swerve your car over to the side to write that down. We've got you.
Like we always do. And Dr. Heller, thank you for coming on. And we are so thrilled to have you, but also looking forward to as much amazing information in our next episode when people really don't get along. Yeah. So thank you.
So it's my pleasure. This is a blessing to be able to contribute in this way. So I thank you.
Holy hell. That was heavy, but so worth it. Agreed?
Agreed.
Oh my God. Okay. Guys, everybody take one big deep breath. Exhale. We're going to lighten things up as we wrap this episode. So we are going to jump into our rapid fire question game called Decline to Comment. Okay.
Do it.
Morgan, are you ready?
Ready.
Ready. Okay, here we go. Morgan, what was your favorite movie as a child?
Thomas Crown Affair.
As a child?
I don't know. Who remembers their childhood favorite movies?
Yeah, but you did watch. You might as well say The Tinder Swindler.
Okay. Anyway, don't judge me. Don't judge me. Keep going.
Fine. Okay. Your favorite bakery item?
Chocolate chip cookies.
Classic. What do you order at an Italian restaurant?
Maybe fish. Fish, probably.
Have you ever had lash extensions?
Once.
Okay. And what's the most ridiculous fad diet you've ever done?
I would say low carb. I'm not good at low carb. Mm. All right, your turn.
I'm ready. Here we go.
What's your favorite Thomas habit?
Sorry, I can't.
You know what? Everyone loves Thomas Crown Affair, so I don't know why you're being so judgy. You're being so judgy.
My answer would have been Annie, like a normal children's movie.
Okay, you watched like musical. I did not. Okay, moving on.
Here we go.
Okay. What is your favorite ice cream topping?
Hot fudge.
What's your favorite holiday?
Thanksgiving.
If you could only eat one food the rest of your life, what would it be?
Mashed potatoes.
What's your favorite sleeping position?
On my side, left side. And you can tell by the way my eyes droop down. Botox?
Would you like going to the movies or you prefer watching it at home?
Watching it at home so I don't have to watch it.
You just fall asleep. Okay, everybody, we have done it. We just want you to know that this episode was so necessary, and we absolutely love and appreciate every listener out there. We know that divorce is hard. We know it's draining, and we know that the unknown can really feel scary. Our goal is to offer some guidance and sometimes some humor.
That's right. That's what we're here for, people. So speaking of the humor, you know that we all need it, right? So for a little dose of levity, pop on over to Instagram. You can see me at the Andrea Rappaport and my homegirl Morgan over here at
Divorce Attorney Chicago. Come see us and leave us some reviews. Tell your neighbors, your friends, your ex. We don't care. Tell them about our podcast and let other people learn how not to suck at divorce.
Because we all have the ability to suck, and we've got the ability to not suck, people. And we know sometimes it is day by day.
Or hour by hour.
That's right. But regardless, you have got this. And we have got you. For more support, please join our private communities on Facebook and Patreon. The How Not to Suck at Divorce podcast is executively produced by Andrea Rappaport.